First of all, he's a great coach. He worked with Boris Becker, he worked with me. With Bob, you know, it's not only work on the court, teach you how to hit forehand, backhand, how to win the point. It's off the court, you know. Bob made me a better person. He taught me a lot of things off the court that made me a better person after in my life, and we stayed great friends. And I introduced him with Marin Cilic, and they really liked each other, and this works, what, already 4 or 5 years, and I think Bob can make him one of the best tennis players in the world.
He brought a lot of things to me, and I think he's a vital part that I'm playing well, that I came to this level. And I learned so much from him, and he brought me a lot of experience and the things that I would need probably 2 or 3 years by myself on tour to get those things.
The voice of Marin Cilic, before that, Goran Ivanišević. Bob Brett has coached many fine players across the world in a career in coaching around 30 years. Boris Becker, Goran, also throwing Andrei Medvedev, Mario Ancic, and many more. He has founded a tennis academy in Italy. He's worked with many governing bodies and been much sought after as a coach for a long, long time. And I've discovered a few other things in the green room about Bob in the last half hour before coming on air, because when it's all said and done, his roots are here in Victoria. Welcome to you. Good to see you.
Yes, good evening. It's nice to be here.
Nice to come back to Melbourne.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
And you're here, of course, I think, doing some coaching?
Well, this week I decided to do a camp for 4 days, and we thought it was going to be 16 players, and because in the beginning it looked like it was only 12, and now we've got 28, so it did grow a little bit. And then there's 3 Japanese boys in the group, and for 2 days, which is really good. And it also was the coaches that we've had during the last couple of days has been really good. Warren Maher, Russell Cornell, and a lot of others. And it was really nice that everyone was participating. And that's a great contribution that everybody has.
So, Bob, I mean, we probably need 2 hours with you to tell your whole story
tonight.
Too
much rubbish.
But, you know, you're born here in Victoria, and then your life has taken you to just about to every corner of the world in a sport you've got a great passion for. And, you know, when you think of a name like Harry Hopman, and who's, you know, a huge name in tennis, and your introduction to him, and that led to introduction to others, and then all of a sudden you're coaching Boris Becker at his peak, and we want to talk about that, and then, you know, Goran Ivanišević, one of the great characters, who Mark and I were fortunate to interview a couple of years ago. He gave us about half an hour of his time, and then developing Marin Cilic and many others, and obviously the last few years really sort of trying to put as much into the grassroots of the sport through your academy. You reside in beautiful Monte Carlo these days, which is in my top 3 destinations, so half your luck. But, I mean, just try and summarise for us an amazing journey in tennis.
Well, there's no doubt that I think that so many people have made a contribution to me, and so you've got Harry Hopman, and even George McCall, who was Davis Cup captain for the United States, and I was just sitting at Kooyong on a chair there, and he started chatting with me, and then just things start to grow up. Arthur Ashe and Davis Cup players from, I was only 12, and things just, then I eventually was lucky with Stan Nichols.
Great person in tennis, wasn't he, Bob? Stan Nichols. I know Paul Aitken, who's not here tonight, he spoke so glowingly of Stan. I reckon it was probably last year on our show. And there'll be some people not in that generation who might know what he exactly contributed, but
well,
Stan, a person that meant a lot to you, obviously.
Yeah, well, Stan had 26 athletes in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And making, so there's such a big, there's a joint between Mr. Hopman and Stan Nichols, and they both make such a great contribution to players. And Harry Hopman was a personality with it. and he really sort of moved it around to make it better and successful. And then with Stan Nichols, he'd take you in the gym, and there's all sorts of first there was an Oasis in the city, and then it went to his own home, and he was then there were like 80 people in a day in the gym, on the grass and everything like that, and you got all sorts of people, footballers from Melbourne and all sorts of and also rowing,
yep.
Peter Anthony and all of these people, and so they've, you know, I was young compared to everyone there, and they may give you such a lesson on how to deal things and how you need to grow and how you develop yourself and things like that. And just the stories that they tell, you know, and those things without that, and it's the same thing with Boris and Goran and Ancic,
yep.
And Kiefer and all of these guys who came up in Marin and Medvedev. And so I learned so much more from, for example, Boris, and then I learned that, what I can sort of then understand what he does and then what Goran does, and it's sort of, they're like things in the window. And that, I think, is really a great, great contribution to any coach who is able to do that. And that, I think, was probably the best thing that I could ever do.
I'm amazed sitting next to a man who has done everything in the game, and being a young coach, I'm really keen to know the secrets that Bob has. And I know there probably won't be many secrets, but just listening to what the players have said about you, about the way that you made them better people off the court, is that part of your philosophy to develop good people as well as good tennis players?
Well, of course. And, of course, you know, there are some of the players that I've had. I was on the tour since I was 25. And sort of now I'm 65, so that's 40 years. But the thing is that some of the players, their language is not necessarily the best, but it ends up moving it around, and then also for their development and that those things are very important, and their growth and how they become better and better. And it's nice, it's really, I enjoy actually having, you know, trying to coach a lot of people, because you try to do something that becomes a little bit better for the players, and you think, oh, that's good. And it's more that they are playing better then. And that's what I think is much more fulfilling,
yep.
than anything else. Yeah.
Bob Brett is our very special guest. I think the first time ever in First Serve history, two Bretts are in the studio. So Bob is with us.
Bob.
Mark.
No, your last name.
Oh, it's the fullest.
So we've got it all covered. And if you'd like to ask Bob a question, it's been an amazing...
Bob Brett.
Exactly. I've got to get my tongue around that. Who's been on the professional tour for around 30 years, coaching some of the great names in the sport. If you want to give us a call, 9429 1116. Sam's at in Reservoir tonight. Welcome to you, Sam.
Hey, welcome. Thank you, guys. How are you guys going?
We're going well.
Going great.
Awesome. I'd like to ask a couple of questions. One is, I'm training my niece, she's a 14-year-old. I've been training for 4 years. And she's getting the game together, the serving, the forehand, the double backhand. I'm just having a trouble with her backhand on the net, which she runs towards the net. And I just can't straighten her out. I mean, to get the open face and to, you know, go down the line or something. Well, she can go cross court, but she can't go down the line. You think it's a mental thing?
You mean from the volley or from the ground
strike? Yeah, volley.
From the volley. Well, the thing is, I think one of the things that's really important is to start actually early for young children to volley, and being close to them and, you know, to the net, and you just push the ball to them and let them. Sometimes I've been using paddles, and then starting with the backhand. Because if you're forehand dominant, You do very little to the backhand. And so what I would suggest, do more emphasis on the backhand with the hand at the level of your right shoulder, and you need to be shoulder towards the net, and you just push and you just bunt the ball a little bit, not trying to force it, and you just push it over the net because it'll be close, and that's how you let them start and get used to it. And obviously with when you're using two hands, it's not so easy, because it's been the two-hander, and that's why do a lot of work starting at the net and then moving back towards the baseline. That's what I would suggest, and then do much more, as I said, on the backhand. And if you do it right, you'll be able to hit down the line, you'll be able to hit a drop shot, and you'll be able to knife a little one short cross court, and the other one won't be able to get the ball.
Let's head to Tony, who's out in Campbellfield. Welcome, Tony.
G'day, gentlemen. Bob, my question is, if you were coaching Nick Kyrgios, what would your advice be?
Nick Kyrgios, Bob.
Well, the wise thing is that Nick hasn't asked me to be his coach, so I think it was a wise thing from Nick. No, I think that, look, I think that everybody has a personality, which is really important, and each player needs to have confidence as to what they're going to do and how. And it's much better that it's very poor to make a decision, to make a sort of a statement from me of Nick. I think Nick is really, he's got some very dangerous weapons of his on his game, and I think he's still got things that he can even possibly bring to his game. So it's not something that's wrong, but it's just being able to keep persevering his role. And I think that would be good for him. And I hope he does really well.
We do. Good on you, Tony.
It's a great question from Tony. I think it's a question that probably so many Australian tennis fans have got about Nick Kyrgios. I think we seem to forget, though, like Bob's saying, he's got so many great things going for him. He's got so many weapons in the game. He's 22 years of age and top 30 in the world. If we had said that, you know, a player would be that, you know, you project forward and go, at 22 years of age, we've got a top 30 player, I think we'd all be pretty excited with that. But we know he can do more. There's no doubt there's more in him. But he's doing a great job. He's just fine-tuning some things. Hopefully we can see a different Nick Kyrgios in 2019 from a mental perspective more than anything.
Bob, I want to go back. I was reading an article in the Times of India where you were quoted back in 2006. I think this is a really, really interesting comment. Let's see if you remember this, Bob.
Should I move out of the stadium, out of the room?
Yeah. A champion is someone who maximizes his potential, not someone who has the number one ranking. I reckon it's a great quote, because we often talk on this show, what is the measurement of success in a tough sport like tennis, where you've got 2,000-odd players ranked. Not everyone can get to the absolute pinnacle at the top. And, Mark, I think of, you know, John Millman right now, who is getting every ounce out of himself and will probably never get to world number one, but will walk away with a very respectable career. But can you just take us back to, I suppose, your thoughts around that comment at the time?
Well, first of all, John Millman, I think, did a great job and against Federer.
Yeah.
It's something that would be one of his major events that he could ever take. And great congratulations to him, and great performance.
Mm.
Of course, you can say that, you can repeat that, but I mean, the thing is, you try your best. That I think it is, and it's your commitment, and it's your passion. It's the things that you try to add, little things, and you have to listen to other people. I remember actually with John Fitzgerald at Sydney, and I was coaching Nicholas Kiefer.
Yep.
And so we were talking, and Kiefer was, you know, getting like, hitting enough balls, but not able to break up the other player. And then John said, you know what? you only need to put one more ball up in the air.
Mm.
And that makes it. And then Kiefer went from 32 into 42, and he ended up at 4. Yep. So I accept that.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's so many definitions of success in tennis, aren't there? I mean, not everyone, very few get to world number one. So what, I mean, if you build a career, I mean, what do you think, Bob, on the tour, is a, you know, if you've made top 50, is that a successful career? Top 100, is that a successful career in a sport that's got 2,000 players ranked? And you're effectively your own entity who travels, earns prize money, has to pay expenditure. You're your own little business, in a sense, aren't you? I mean, I'm just keen to get what your definition of success when people walk away from the tour, because not everyone has that ability to get to the top.
Well, first of all, you have to think that you've really made every commitment,
yep,
to it. You've tried in every avenue. You're on the court, technically, physically, mentally, psychologically. And then the thing that you need to, when you're very fortunate that you have other people who make a contribution to the player, to the coach, and I think those things make a huge, big difference. And when you finish at the end of your career, you can say, well, you've really done everything possible.
Yeah. Let's bring in Eli from St Kilda, who's given us a call at 23-9. Eli, welcome.
Hi, Brad. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Very good, thanks. What do you got for us?
I just wanted to know, I've been playing tennis since maybe 9 or 10, and like the one thing that I struggled with, even though I can pick up the ball and like sort of I know my way around the court pretty well, but I'm not able to get so much power on my ground strokes. My backhand I'm able to get like decently sometimes, but sometimes I play some of my friends and like they're not as consistent as me in all the different parts of their game, but they're just able to just in a snapshot hit a massive forehand, and I don't even know what they did to achieve such power, and I can't really do that. I just keep on pushing it and pushing it. So I just wanted to know how you can just get that sort of explosive power.
Well, I'll bow to the coaches here, Bob and Mark.
You want to have a shot, Mark?
Go for it, Bob. All yours.
Well, there was a man in the 1920s, a guy called Bill Tilden, who told a note to Harry Hopman in 1929 that control and restraint and to hit the ball where the other fellow ain't. So I think that would be something, a good start, because the actual part of the game is how you can make the other person lose. And it's not by power. It's, as I said, as Harry Hopman, Mr. Hopman, as I would ever always say, is to have that control and restraint. And it's the, let's say you've got 75-80% where it's solid, then you can increase the speed up to 85% and with some control, and you come back. And then, of course, you can go to 90%, but that's sort of on the risk factor. And so you've got to know where you're going to be able to pick the right shot at the right time.
Welcome back at 17-9. Brett Phillips and Mark Sifoulis. Tonight our special guest is Bob Redd, of course, an Australian, South Melbourne supporter too, Bob. We should give the Swans a little mention.
I'm a South Melbourne supporter.
South Melbourne, of the course, old South, the Bloods.
Only one like that, and with the colours of the Swans.
A few days down at the Lakeside Oval?
Yeah.
On the terraces?
I think, definitely. Sometimes pass that through the Swan Lake there.
Yeah, good days.
It's really great.
Mark, I know you've got a couple of more questions to fire at Bob as a fellow coach.
Oh, I'm in awe of this guy. I'm sitting here and I'm like, wow, the achievements he has had in his coaching, and a very, very humble man. So just listening to him speak I'm learning every second, the way he goes about it and the way that the players speak about him. And I only hope at the end of my coaching career one day people speak the same way about me. I'd love to have that same thing that Goran said about him, and so did Marin Cilic. But the game obviously has changed in the time that you've obviously coached, been around. What are the big differences now to probably even 10 or 15 years ago?
Trying to hit the ball much harder and flatter.
Yep.
So there was no trajectory, no short slice, the same, and things like that. So That, I think, can be damaging to the opponents, of course, for some periods, but not necessarily for too long. And you'll find even some players in the top 10, they're a long way back from the baseline, but they don't have volleys.
Yeah.
They don't have a serve and volley. So they just wait for the ball to come, whereas when you've got players like Federer and those sort of players who can maneuver, and Nadal and Djokovic and that, they can hit the ball shorter, and whereas a lot of the players are just trying to hit through the baseline, and that's, I think, a big mistake.
And do you see the game going more towards where it was in the 80s, where there's a bit more net play going to happen because players can't adapt to someone coming forward? So Federer does it really well, and Federer's brought that back into the game. Is that going to keep continuing, that trend where the players keep coming forward and start pressing and putting the pressure on the baseliner?
So I think that it's not necessarily about taking a big swing when somebody's trying to hit the ball really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the ball is not that hard. And because a lot of them have a lighter racket, and so there's not as much as a weight, like a weighted racket, yep. Then because that sort of pushes the ball and bouncing a little bit higher, and I think that has more penetration. And so when you can do that, as you get them into a position, you can actually come closer to the bounce of the ball and play off it and put the ball behind the opponent so that then you're able to come and cover the net.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of them, the players don't try and lob. They'll try to pass,
yeah.
Which is then easier, and they're closer.
Yeah.
And Federer is all over it. But when Djokovic plays him, he puts it up over him.
Yeah, spot on.
That's the difference.
Got another little quote. This is from Marin Cilic, Bob. In fact, it was
which year, please?
Well, 2014 when he won the US Open.
Oh, yes.
Cilic on Brett and Ivanisevic, a perfect match for me. And his quote was, "I feel, of course, that the ex-players are going to be the best coaches, but not necessarily would they be the best ones from an early age for players to teach them everything and have the patience." So obviously comparing being coached by yourself and then Goran coming in the last few years. And we were sort of touching on, you know, coach development, Mark. You're coaching sort of in that 10 to 16 age group, and Bob outside of coaching these big stars, doing a lot of coaching in those junior ranks. Interesting comment. How do you sort of assess that about, you know, maybe the ex-player not being ideal at the younger levels, or to really lay the foundations, if you like?
Well, it actually requires the right communication.
Yep.
And I think all the good coaches that I've met, they're not necessarily telling a story rather than saying, you have to do this.
Mm.
And that then brings them something that they could create something with it. And that, I think, is really beneficial. I think that's where, I mean, I think Marin actually played a great US Open in 2014.
Yep.
It was really good, and I think he deserved it. Goran came on after me. I think it was a great inspiration there. It just worked perfect. And then, of course, always different things can happen, different coaches and whatever.
But obviously we've seen the last few years, you know, Edberg and Lendl and let's rattle them off, Mark. Agassi.
Agassi's come on board now,
Magnus Norman.
Who are coming to the coaching ranks, and particularly for those that have had Grand Slam success, I suppose the theory that they can come in and put a bit of icing on top in the pressure moments of Grand Slams. But in the case of when Novak had Stepanek and then sort of Agassi sitting over the top, so Stepanek was, I suppose, the main coach, but Andre was there to just, you know, really, who'd been there and done that and won Grand Slams. I mean, how have you seen that change with, you know, a lot of the ex-champion players sort of stepping into coaching, but not full-time, but sort of just, you know, dipping in and out of coaching?
You need to have the relationship with the player.
Yep.
And to understand their sensitivity, and that, I think, is really important, because you can't just sort of come, okay, I'm coming here for this 2 weeks and then I'm seeing you in 3 months.
Mm.
it still needs to have the communication, and I think that's really important. But there is a relationship, that's for sure. And there are different things when they've had a lot of experience in the Grand Slams and things like that. But you, as I said, it's the weeks before that that are really important.
Yep.
And that's where those coaches, the ones who are with them all the time, and the ones who are travel, the ones, the experienced ones, they should also be there the few, let's say 3 or 4 weeks before the Grand Slam.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting coaching dynamic, the way it's sort of been set up these days. I'll tell you what, we'll get our final break in because we need some Boris time, Mark, on the other side. We need to devote a few moments to life with Boris Becker, and Bob Brett could tell us a couple of stories leading up to 9 o'clock here on the First Serve. Welcome back as we come up to 9 o'clock. Brett Phillips, Mark Sifoulis, Bob Brett, our special guest tonight. Well-known coach in the Caper for a long, long time, travelling around the globe. Now, the clock is ticking here to 9 o'clock, so we've got 5 minutes to talk about your great relationship with Boris Boom Boom Becker. So how does Bob Brett meet Boris Becker? You coached him for 3.5 years, Bob, and the 80s is where he took the tennis world by storm as a 17-year-old winning Wimbledon. But just give us a bit of the backstory of meeting and hooking up with Boris Becker.
When Boris was 16...
Yep.
And he was at Kooyong, and then he was with Gunter Bosch and with Jon Tyriac. So that was it. And then Boris, we had some conversations, but just about one player who I had known. And I said, oh, you know, you maybe that might help you if you do something. And that turned out all right. And he intimidated the opponent, actually. And but then he also came and with Suguso and Scott Davis and a few guys, and he practiced with them as well. And Gunter Bosch was great. I really like him. Until there was a conflict with Bosch and Tyriac, and so, and then at the end of 87, Boris asked me if I was available to coach him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky, and really it's an honor, because actually there's such a big difference in being able to understand it and to try to, the one thing as you do is make sure you don't say too much.
Yeah,
that's going to get stay at the right moment.
Was he very coachable?
Yes.
Yep.
He was very good, but you've just got to make sure. I think one of the things that is really important is try to have about 20 seconds of communication.
Yep.
Because that's really important. Because some people go for 4 minutes, like I'm talking now. Sorry. But anyway, I think that's really to get back into the game, you see, and that's really what's important, to get on the game and to try to follow up what maybe we've said and then to work on with it.
Yep.
And that he was... great determination that he has is one of his brilliant things. His skills, his technique, his determination, and he was a Grand Slam title holder.
Yeah, which is great. Colourful life. I mean, a lot going on in the life of Boris Becker. Did you ever think he'd venture into coaching? And I mean, we've only got about a minute or so, Bob, but obviously, he and Novak did a lot of great things together. I think, was it 6 majors that
yes.
Novak won under,
oh, yes,
with Boris involved?
Oh, yes. He made such a difference. And I think that's a great honour, you know, to Boris's knowledge and being able to deliver it to the player.
Absolute pleasure to have you in tonight. We need another hour. but you've been on an amazing journey. Tennis has obviously given you a lot. You're still contributing a hell of a lot to the game. Obviously, great thrill to get back to Australia where your roots are, but you've seen the world, and we often talk how global this sport is. I mean, Australia dominated once upon a time. It's tough for Australia to dominate now with the amount of countries playing and how competitive it is, tennis on the tour. But thank you for sharing a few stories tonight. I think a lot of our listeners would have got a few good coaching tips as well. So, pleasure to have you in.
And all the people who helped me in Melbourne was great, and I'm really honoured with that.